Have you ever shared something that felt important and the other person just waved it away? You said, hey, that felt off, or that was rude, and you were told you're overreacting, or that's not what happened. And you start questioning yourself. Maybe you feel confused, even distressed. You can't quite explain why. It's not gaslighting and it's not malicious, but it still leaves you feeling unseen and unheard. And this is the space that we're sitting in today. In this episode of This Complex Life, I am talking about Cassandra syndrome. I'll explore how the term has been used in the past and how it's being picked up in pop culture with a slightly different understanding and interpretation. I want to take a look at where it's showing up in relationships. I'll share some of my initial hesitations around the term and what changed my mind, and I'll give you some examples of how I see this show up in couples therapy and how I work with this dynamic in the therapy room, and hopefully it gives you some ideas of what you can do if this is something happening in your own life. Now, Cassandra syndrome originally was used to describe people who spoke up and weren't believed. Think of climate scientists warning about climate change and warming oceans and told, yeah, nah. Or activists warning about racism, abuse, and inequality and not being believed, and maybe sometimes even being punished for it. In medical settings, people, often women, reporting symptoms and being dismissed. These experiences are about seeing something clearly and being ignored or told that's not real. More recently, however, how I heard the term was around this in the context of neurodiverse relationships. Sometimes it's used by the neurotypical partners. So a neurotypical partner with a autistic partner, often male to female, the male autistic partner with a neurotypical female partner. And as I was digging a bit deeper, I've seen it actually be used by the autistic partner as well. But this can happen in any combination of relationships, neurodivergent, neurotypical, both having neurodivergent traits or being neurodivergent, both being neurotypical. It can be used in a number of ways, but commonly in the pop culture and in the blogs and the videos that I've been reading and watching and the things I've been listening to, it tends to be used in this way to explain the impact on the neurotypical partner. Now, the term has been used in very different ways and not always kindly, and it captures a very real emotional experience, and I'm always hesitant to use labels, and I'll explain why in a little bit, but it's something that people have been asking for. So is Cassandra. Now, Cassandra is a figure from Greek mythology, and I don't remember learning about her back at Greek school when I was younger, because I'm sure I would have used it as a, probably would have used it many times when I felt I wasn't getting my way or I can see the truth. I'm sure my parents would have loved that. So Cassandra was a princess of Troy, and Apollo gave her the gift of prophecy based on her sleeping with him. Now, she backs out of this arrangement. He doesn't take away the gift. So Apollo still gives her the gift of prophecy, but he curses her that she will tell the truth, but no one will ever believe what she says. And she warns people of Troy about the Trojan horse. If you can remember that story where the big wooden horse is wheeled in, she speaks the truth, but is ignored. And her story is tragic, but also incredibly relevant. It's about holding the truth and still being dismissed. Now, her plight has been associated with the struggle shared by anybody telling the truth but not being believed. Think Sarah Connor in The Terminator. You know, Judgment Day is coming, and not only do people not believe her, they lock her up in a psychiatric institution. Okay, so that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here. There is an impact that this has on people, and sometimes it's used as Cassandra syndrome. I've also heard it called Cassandra affective deprivation disorder, CADD. Again, these are not formal diagnostic terms, but that's to describe the long-term deprivation of emotional attention and affection caused by traumatic suffering in the neurotypical partner. And that has its whole, there's a whole history behind that. You can kind of have a bit of a look around and see how that was created. But I want to talk about it in more general terms. And first, I want to start off by talking about how this is different to gaslighting. And I've got a lot of bones to pick with this term gaslighting. It is used poorly, incorrectly, so many times. Now, Cassandra syndrome describes the emotional pain of being repeatedly dismissed or invalidated. One's subjective experience of feeling hurt, uncomfortable, isn't acknowledged. Often unintentional and comes from a mismatch in emotional styles or communication, can lead to loneliness, self-doubt, relational trauma, and physical symptoms in the long term. Gaslighting, however, this is the key bit is a deliberate manipulation tactic where somebody actively undermines another person's reality. So gaslighting is it involves denial, trivializing feelings, lying, and blame shifting to gain control or power. Typically a pattern of emotional abuse, often in an unequal power dynamic. This causes deep or can cause deep self-doubt, dependency on the manipulator, and real long-lasting harm. So the key difference here is in deliberate and manipulative. So when we compare Cassandra syndrome to gaslighting, the intent is different. So in Cassandra syndrome, it's usually unintentional. In gaslighting, we see a deliberate and manipulative intention there. The power dynamics change. So in Cassandra syndrome, this is often based on a miscommunication, mismatch in emotional styles, kind of like speaking different languages. In gaslighting, it's often involves control, dominance, or abuse. The experience for people can feel similar. So we might see in Cassandra syndrome feeling unheard, invalidated, and emotionally exhausted. In gaslighting, we see some of those, but being made to doubt perception, memory, and emotional experience. There are some similarities in the emotional outcome of these. So in Cassandra syndrome, we're likely to see isolation, anxiety, and then diminished self-worth. And in gaslighting, deep confusion, dependency, and trauma. Now, the context changes a bit here as well. So Cassandra syndrome, how it's been used in pop culture at the moment, often talks about a neurodiverse, neurotypical relationship or a relational mismatch. For gaslighting, it comes across in various settings, intimate partnerships, family, workplaces, and institutions. So it extends to other contexts. But the biggest difference, which really I can't stress enough, is the deliberate manipulative intent for gaslighting. Now, how this shows up in relationships, it shows up in a number of ways. So one person might say something like, oh, your mum was really rude to me. And the other replies, she wasn't rude to you, being dramatic. Or they say, this conversation made me feel small. And their response is, that's not what happened at all. You know, the listener might be trying to reassure or correct, but what they're doing is invalidating the other person's emotional experience. Now, this isn't gaslighting. It's not manipulative or abusive. It's often coming from fear, confusion, discomfort, or not even recognizing the importance of what that person's saying. But the impact on the speaker is still real. That person can start to shut down. They might stop sharing and they lose trust in their own feelings. And the relationship becomes less emotionally safe. Now, I was hesitant to talk about this. I used to cringe a bit when I first heard this term, and I feel like it was shorthand for my autistic partner is the problem. And the initial things that I read, it came across in a very blamey way. And I worried that it ignored relational patterns and complexity, that it kept showing up. My clients were mentioning it. And so I started looking into it a little bit more closely. I read heaps of blogs, watched videos, listened to different voices. And then I started to realize that it wasn't just about neurodivergent relationships. It was about the emotional experience of being unheard. And I've seen this happen across all kinds of couples. But we do see it in pop culture be talked about specifically to that combination of autistic to neurotypical partnership. And there are some reasons for that. I'll talk about a little bit more some of the challenges that those couples might face. To require additional support, I know as a therapist, trying to understand people's communication style, their history, how they've learned what they've learned, how their brain interprets things is a really important piece of the work that we do so that we can support those skills, that relational skill, not masking and not being fake, but evolving and adapting those skills to meet that context. Now, the Cassandra metaphor has been expanded to include the effects of autism and ADHD, and not only on the neurotypical partner, but on both partners who struggle. When we look at the both-way struggle communication, that's often called the double empathy problem, where each person thinks they're communicating really clearly and neither feels like they understand. And so the double empathy problem is that we communicate, experience, and display emotions and how we interact with people, form friendships, and the world around us is different. Autistic people experience that different to non-autistic people. And that can create some difficulties there in that communication style. So when people with very different experiences in the world interact with one another, they will struggle to empathize with one another. And this is likely to be exacerbated through differences in language use, comprehension, and brain styles. So that's the double empathy problem. When we come back to Cassandra syndrome, regardless of why the Cassandra syndrome term continues to resonate with people, it does. And sometimes people hearing that and knowing that provides some insight and relief. Now, when I see this in my work, it is really quite difficult. And people come into couples therapy to talk about communication or conflict. They're usually the most common ones. And I see this play out in conversations. So one partner might say something like, I felt embarrassed when you made that joke in dinner. And the other person says, it was just a joke, you're too sensitive. Someone might say, I need you to back me up when your dad was rude. The other replies, he wasn't being rude, you misunderstood. Or you're always being so dramatic, he didn't mean it like that. These moments are not often meant to be cruel, but they dismiss the other person's emotional reality. Over time, the person that receives that on the receiving end starts to pull back. Maybe they lash out or maybe they go quiet. Either way, that emotional connection suffers. Loneliness starts to creep in. You start to feel disconnected and rely on your partner less and less, or maybe communicate with them less and less, or get angry and get really heightened. Now, this is not just about autism or neurodivergence. When I was doing some research for this, a little R research, not a formal project, I was seeing people talk about this from both sides. I was seeing autistic people talk about this from their experience of being like, yeah, I'm told the truth and no one is believing me. No one's understanding my point of view. And then I'm seeing neurotypical people say, I've shared all this stuff and they're ignoring it, or they're saying that wasn't true, or that's not how it meant, and getting really defensive. And over time, that can lead to some really difficult dynamics in the relationship. So this is, while it's used in this context of autism and neurotypical relationships, it can happen in any relationships between two neurotypical people, between two neurodivergent people, between friends, colleagues, parents, and teens. What it really comes down to, in my understanding of it, is emotional misattunement. The belief that validating someone's experience means agreeing with them. Often I see people try to fix things or fact check or defend or try and provide perspective or context or justify the intention wasn't that, instead of just sitting with the discomfort. They think that they're offering perspective, but what the other person needed in that moment is often empathy and validation. And I'm going to say it again. Validating someone's experience does not mean you agree with them. If you say that must have felt awful to be at a dinner table and someone make a joke at your expense, that doesn't mean that you agree that that joke was meant to be hurtful. But if your partner says, I felt embarrassed when you made that joke at dinner, then saying it makes sense that you would feel embarrassed. I can see that this is an awkward environment. It doesn't mean that that was your intention. So validating does not mean you have to agree. It's understanding from their perspective or their position how what they're feeling, thinking makes sense to them. In a therapy context, I would probably be pausing these conversations and be pointing out when someone's experience is being dismissed. And when I come back to some of the challenges I had with this term, I felt like it was forcing autistic people to mask, that they had to be more palatable in their approach, that it meant that they had to adapt and manipulate their behavior, they had to adapt and mask essentially. And that's not what I want to do. I want to create an environment where people can be themselves and develop relationship skills or relational intelligence to have difficult conversations where both people feel heard. So when this is happening, I would be asking someone, you know, can we just stay with what was said without needing to correct it right now? I help people notice when they're moving into logic or defense. I might help people explore those four horsemen that I've talked about in previous episodes. I'll pop a link to that in the show notes so you can check it out. And I might say things like, that sounded like a rebuttal. Can we come back to what they were feeling? So giving people the skill to reflect on what their partner is saying. And I often talk about why it can be really hard to validate something you don't agree with. I hear people practicing by saying things like, I can see why that hurt even if I wouldn't have read it that way. We don't want to add that bit, just saying, I can see why that hurt. I know that sometimes we think if they can just see it from my point of view, they wouldn't feel that way. If they could just understand that that wasn't my intention, they wouldn't be upset. And then I wouldn't be uncomfortable with the fact that they're upset. That's not helpful in this scenario. Being able to say, I can see why that hurt. It makes sense that you felt disappointed. I understand why you would have felt rejected in that moment. You don't have to feel the exact same thing yourself in that scenario. You don't have to think, well, that's not what the person meant, so they shouldn't feel that way. It's what that person's reality is. I unpack why validation feels dangerous to some people. that it feels like they're losing ground, that they're losing respect, that they're admitting to something that they didn't think was wrong. And it's not about that, because that fear of feeling like you did something wrong or you're going to get into trouble and then not being able to validate that person's experience, it really shuts the conversation down. So trying to support both partners to see how dismissiveness can be protective, but it's not helpful in these conversations. That work we do needs to slow things down and stay in the moment, especially when emotions show up. Try to practice curiosity over correction and connection over correction. Nobody wants to go into all their relationships and just be given feedback and corrected and adjusted and improved and optimized. We want to feel connected. Okay? We want to find as many small moments to build emotional safety again and start to reduce the impact of Cassandra syndrome. Because what can happen if you've been feeling like this, if you've been feeling disconnected, that your emotions aren't valid, that your subjective experience is wrong? At best, it can lead to some disconnection and loneliness. At worst, it can lead to some very severe symptoms of mental ill health. We can see significant symptoms of anxiety and depression. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that for their partner either. So this is a really important piece of work to understand, to get some support around, so that you can have the thriving, happy, connected relationship that you want. If you're the one who feels like you're waving the flag and then being told to calm down, or you've started to doubt your own perceptions, maybe you've stopped speaking up because it never lands. You're not making it up. It might not be intentional. It still matters. It can still hurt, and repair is possible. With the right support, it is possible to feel heard, respected, and safe again. If this has made you reflect on some of your own reactions, maybe you're the one who struggles to validate. That's okay too. These patterns are common, but they're also changeable.